The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. I don't know about you, but a funny Friday always makes me a little bit giddy. I'm a little bit giddy today. We've a packed show coming up after 4 o'clock. You'll know her from Super Nanny back in the day. She's gives parenting advice all over the world. She has her own website, numerous books, numerous programs. Jo Frost, I speak of course, and she's going to be with us after 4 o'clock. So if you have a little person in your life who suffers with toddler tantrums or is a picky eater or a bad sleeper or just downright bold, and you want advice from the woman who's given advice to the best, and she's seen it all. I was just looking at some YouTube clips during lunchtime. It's all very unsettling. And when you get inside people's lives and you see how their children behave and how they behave to their children, it's very unsettling. Anyway, if you want advice from Jo, it's free of charge, FOC, after 4 o'clock, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Jack L from Athy, he would have been Jack Lockman or Jack Lukeman. From Athy, he's going to guide us through the soundtrack to his life, which I'm really looking forward to. And we have live music in the company of Hermitage Green. Hey, you're going to play your new single for us. Yep. Do singles exist anymore? They do, sort of.
Yes, they're probably more important than albums, are they? Though, because people don't listen to albums. So,
all right, yeah, right,
singles
okay.
are paramount.
We'll talk about the gigs. I'll just mention them now while we have people's attention. So it's the June Bank Holiday. You're in Whelan's on the Thursday and the Friday night.
Yeah.
The Friday night sold out. Friday still tickets available for the Thursday. And then you're back home to Limerick for the Sunday night of the Bank Holiday. And you're playing in King John's Castle. Is that a big open air thingamajig?
Yeah, it's class.
Right.
Obviously the castle is the backdrop and big stage in front of it, and it kind of looks down the Shannon River onto the city, so it's one of the most spectacular venues in the country.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to sing Bring It On Down, which is the new single.
Yes.
That's when it. You're ready.
Thanks, Ray. 1, 2, 3, 4.
So when will I have enough to spend myself free, wave goodbye and leave? I don't know love from lust. They're different in name, but they're exactly the same. Won't you tell me I must name blue into one fool with a loaded gun? What did you say about trust? Well, I've heard enough now. I'll call you bluff now. Bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down. Systems a joke, just mirrors and smoke. Constant boom and bust. It's too late to change, and there is nothing the same. I've never known gold to rust, but it pales in comparison to you in my arms again. And if it all turns to dust, what could worse now? The whole world is now. Bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down. Oh, bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down. Let's call a halt to this endless assault. What would you put first? Pockets of gold or some light in your soul? It's part of our life. We must decide if we will get their way. We've got not a choice to make. It's part of our lives, and we must decide if they will get their way. We've got a choice to make. Spend, spend, spend.
Sounds great. Hermitage Green, Bring It On Down. Dermot was baiting the bit out of that power on there. You were really going at it. And it sounded great. Gar has his rock and roll hat on today. He's on sound, so that sounded great. And you're going to come back and sing us out at the end of the programme.
Yes, we'd love to.
And we might have a chance for another bit of a chat there for the moment. Thanks very much to Dermot, Barry, Dan, Griff and Dara. Thank you very much, lads. You can make your way out if you will. Thank you very much. Now, yesterday we ran out of time, and I just mentioned at the end of the programme that we had a person who was making a movie who was looking for gardens with foxes. Well, the man is on the line now. His name is Brian Mason. How are you doing, Brian?
G'day, I'm very well. How are you?
Good day to you. So you're an Australian working in Ireland, and you're making a movie called Animals. Is that it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's right. We're over working with a production company here, Vico Films, that made The Young Offenders. And it's a film called Animals based on a book of the same name.
Right. Well, give us the plot, because it was a very popular book, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. It's a film about two friends who spent their 20s studying literature and drinking around bars around Dublin, and they've sort of reached their just about to reach their 30s, and one of their friends is starting to think maybe it's time to take things a little more seriously and hunker down and try and get some things done in life, and the other one is not so keen on that idea. So it's ostensibly the end of their relationship, but it's very funny. It's a very funny book, and the script is quite funny. So, yeah, we're looking forward to making the film.
Well, Young Offenders was amazing. One of my favourite movies in recent times. Brilliant, brilliant. So if it's anything like that, so animals, anyway, you're looking for animals, specifically foxes in the Dublin area. It's mad. I just mentioned at the end of the show yesterday, Brian, and Inez was on, Temple Oak, heard on your programme that you were looking for people who had foxes in their gardens. I have a very light fence between my garden and an area of semi-wild ground where foxes live, usually for the last few years. In May and June, I've seen from 1 to 4 cubs at any one time playing in my garden, and in the last week or so I've seen an adult fox there or just outside the fence. That's Inez in Temple Oak. Sinead in Temple Oak, more foxes there, even a photographic evidence of her fox. Kate, she says, heard your request on radio. I have a very big problem in my garden. So she's foxes there as well. She needs some advice. We might get to that. That's another day's story. And then Helen has been on. She has foxes in her garden and sent us a YouTube video of that. Diana, she's west of Cork, probably too far away from you. She has foxes. And Louis has foxes as well. He doesn't say where in the country they are. So give us more specifics of what you actually are after, Brian.
Sure. Yeah, good idea. There's a handful of scenes in the film which are just of foxes in and around suburbs. So some in gardens, some just in along the streets. I guess looking for food around bins and things like that. So what we're looking for is, I guess, recent sightings where foxes are. So we can, if we're going to send a camera crew out there, we can have a decent chance of actually being able to film them. From what I understand, they're quite timid creatures in the wild, but a lot of people do feed them, so there is a kind of, they can build a bit of a relationship between the people and the foxes there. Okay. So if there's anything like that where we sort of feel like there's a good chance we could capture them on camera, that'd be great. So yeah, on the street or in the yard, anything like that, really. It's amazing that people
I don't mean to be cheeky, but could you not train one? Is there
well, you know, we met with an animal wrangler, who that's his official title in the film world, and he said they have worked with foxes, but because they're very territorial, they if you take them somewhere to try and film them, they're very shy, and you won't get them to really perform in a or behave in a way which they would naturally. So they sort of, they'll cower and just be basically trying to get out of there. So his recommendation was, if there was any chance of catching them in their natural habitat, as it were, even if that is the city, that is, you'll get a better chance of getting the kind of footage we're after, I suppose.
Right, because it's been a number of wildlife programs. What's his first name? Stafford Johnson. God, we've had him in here loads of times. Colin Stafford Johnson, and he did a program quite recently, last 2 years, where he followed foxes around and he saw a family of foxes, I think up in Ballantyre in Dublin. There's loads of foxes up my part of the woods, neck of the woods, just up the road, Templeogue, obviously. So there's loads of them around. It's just a matter of getting the right ones for you. And just on that little mention yesterday, we got 6 or 7. So I'd say after our little chat now, you're going to get, you know, 40, 50. So you'll have, fantastic. You'll be spoiled for choice.
Spoiled for choice, when, like that.
Yeah, when are you filming, Brian?
We are hoping to get out and start filming foxes, not this coming weekend, but the one after. So, any potential leads, we'll happily follow up and have a chat to people and see if we can make a time to come on out and try and film the foxes.
Do you bring your own tea and biscuits?
Oh, well, you know what? We can bring the biscuits, but okay. We might need to right. borrow someone's kettle to heat the water for the right. tea.
And when will the movie be finished, Brian?
We're filming until the end of April, and then the anticipation is it will be finished early to mid next year with all the editing and all the sort of okay. finishing stuff.
Yeah. And it'll be nice to get a credit at the end. Thanks very much to Innes
sure,
Fletcher,
no worries.
Who let us use the back garden for the foxes. I live within the town boundary of Naas, and for the past 15 years I've had foxes visit my garden. Admittedly, I freed these foxes, and obviously it's a great incentive for their visits. Sorry, feed as opposed to freed. Furthermore, I also have 3 badgers who visit every evening for the peanuts that have been left out for them. They're a lovely sight to behold. Yeah. And lots and lots and lots of foxes in Clontarf, especially at dusk. And foxes in Schoolfield behind me in Limerick, in middle of housing, but I haven't seen them for a while. So there's loads of them there and they'll keep coming in. And we'll pass them on with people's permission. And good luck with the filming and good luck with the foxes.
Thank you so much, sir.
Brian, thanks for taking the call. That's Brian Excellent. Mason there.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Every Friday we sit somebody down in front of me in Studio 10 and ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. Today is the turn of singer Jack L.
Hello.
Jack L, I'm just telling you and everybody else, you were born in the hospital in Thigh in 1973 to Sean and Rose.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest of 4.
Yep.
So you have 2 older sisters and 1 older brother.
That's right.
You were the baby then and you're the baby still.
I still am. Still let me be the baby.
And it's a garage. You were brought up in a garage.
Yeah, it's a very old garage just on the Kilkenny Road out of a tie there. My brother is still running it. But it started with my great-grandfather drove steam engines and all that kind of stuff. And then my grandfather kind of founded it as a place where there was a mechanic. It kind of grew. It was a very big garage. And then he broke it into 3 sections between my father, who did the trucks, and my 2 other uncles, his brothers, who did cars and electronics. And then on my mother's side, there was mechanics as well. So I was surrounded by engines and all that kind of stuff. So,
Was it going to be a life as a mechanic for you if you didn't start singing?
Well, it was, you know, I left school early enough, as did my brother and my father, and began my mechanic career. But I wasn't particularly that way inclined. I was always obsessed by music. That was always the obsession. But I always, every summer, everybody would work in the garage painting or doing something, or you would work up to where you were working on the petrol pumps. And, I wasn't doing great in school, and summer holidays came and school started and nobody really said anything, and I just continued working in the garage. Of course, it was a small conversation, but that was kind of... I always say I'm still on my summer holidays.
Because September came and went and you never went back.
Yeah, that was kind of
it. We get on to that. Let's go right back to the start now. This doesn't have to be an audio memory, but what's your first memory?
My first memory would be, I grew up in... I started my life, first years, we were in an estate called Park Breed in the Tie, and that was right next to Tegrell, the asbestos, we used to call it. So I remember the sound of industry and all that. But one of my first memories is being awoke one night to the sound of a little old session going on in the house, where I had some relations of my dad's had come down from Dublin, and they had acoustic guitars and banjos, and I remember going down and just being amazed by the magic of music. Suddenly everybody was having such a great time. And,
yeah.
It was, and I suppose that was kind of where I started my journey.
What age music. Were you?
I think I would have been 3 or 4 at the time.
And was your dad a singer?
My dad, well, he was a great singer, yeah.
But he's not a great professionally, singer, but yeah.
No, not professionally, and he could have done it professionally. But yeah, that's where I got the love of music from. He just had a great, he's a great voice and a great passion for a lot of the old tenors and Sinatra and all that era. And then my mum would have been more so Beatles and Elvis, you know. So I got a great, large palette of all the greats.
Are you born with a deep voice? Now, you're obviously not, but like, you know, is it sort of predestined in your genes that you're going to have, when your voice breaks, that you're going to have a tenor or a baritone or whatever you might be?
Well, I don't, so it's kind of luck of the draw. What's the Leonard Cohen song? I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice. Or,
that's <your. laughs>
No, I well, funny enough, when I was a kid, I had a soprano voice. And
did you sing in choirs?
Yeah, I could do all the high kind of stuff. But then my voice broke. So since I was about 12 or 13, I've sounded like I was 40, you know. So I remember I used to sing in school and everybody used to laugh because I had such a low voice. But it's kind of turned out all right.
It turned out all right for you, yeah. Okay, so TV memories. We'll play this one and then you can talk to us about its significance after we hear it.
David Banner, physician, scientist, searching for a way to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. Then an accidental overdose of gamma radiation alters his body chemistry. And now when David Banner grows angry or outraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs.
The Incredible Hulk, Dr. David Banner. Great memory there.
Yeah, I was, you know, I was, I don't know, might have been 6 or 7, I suppose, when I think it was 79, 80, that maybe was on the TV. But yeah, it was hilarious because I became obsessed with it. And, you know, it was that thing of it was on every week and you'd wait all week to see The Incredible Hulk. And then I got into, you know, bursting the shirts open and my mother would have to sew them up and bending every spoon in the house. All that kind of stuff. So, yeah, but I love The Incredible Hulk.
It was the transformation, wasn't it? And then the moment, because as a child, I remember, you know, predicting, oh, this is going to go wrong here. Because there was always a simmer.
Twice a week he would turn it. It was always twice a week, yeah. Some around the middle and at the end. And then he would walk off at the end and he'd have that, the really sad music. You know, I used to love that music as well.
Because he was a drifter, wasn't he? He had to drift.
He had to drift, yeah, because he couldn't let anybody know that he was the Incredible Hulk, yeah.
Yeah, and Dr. David Banner, everyone, he was presumed dead.
Yes, and what was your man's name? McGee was after him all the time as well, the same old guy. But it's gas. I mean, I love, you know, I'm a nerd about the Hulk. I've DVDs of all.
Oh, dear.
Of all that kind of stuff. And it's funny listening to the old the director's cuts talking about it and everything, what was going on.
I sort of feel a bit sad for people growing up now because that thing that you, the very first thing you said, waiting from week to week.
Yeah. It was a big thing.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was, yeah. Because you'd all week to talk about it and then talk about it after it happened and on. Now, you know, you just binge on things because they're on
Netflix or every night. Or
there's a few of them actually. I know there's the new Star Trek is on a weekly basis, which is pretty cool if you're Trekkie.
Yeah. What sort of a child were you? What, like, apart from ripping your shirt apart and all that?
Well, I suppose I was kind of, introverted, extroverted, I don't know. I was quite enough. I had, you know, my brothers and sisters were all, you know, they're all great talkers. So I suppose I listened a lot. And you know, we grew up in the town for a while, but then I moved out to the country when I was about 5 or 6. And I loved living in the country. My mother gave me a great love of nature and you know, the garden and birds and all that kind of stuff. So I loved all that. I used to, you know, go for wandering in the country.
You say you were introverted, extroverted. Were you a loner? Did you keep to yourself or had you got loads of mates?
Oh, no, I had loads of mates and I still have the same guys who are my friends to this day. Yeah, since baby infants, I have a lot of the same friends, would you believe?
Isn't that great?
A group of fellas. Yeah, it's gas that we've all maintained a friendship for so long. But that's, you know, that's the nice thing about a small town, I think.
What's the population? I thought it isn't that small.
Well, I don't know. It must...
Was it be 15,000? Would it be 15,000?
I don't know. right, made it through. It must be near that at this stage. I mean, during the boom, it got a lot of influx of building everywhere and lots of people moved down from Dublin. You know, it's become a bit of a commuter town.
Okay, so you say your mum gave you a love of nature and the garden and birds. Put your headphones on there and see if you can spot which bird this is. Any ideas?
Yeah, well, it's the lark,
The lark.
It was a game we used to play when I was a kid, you know. You'd be outdoors and you could hear that sound, but you couldn't see. You know, the trick was to find it. It was that thing where you'd be looking at the skyline for ages and eventually you'd spot it. It was always flew the highest, supposedly, the lark. So that was kind of a neat little game we used to play.
And I remember playing football and rugby, and the Lukemans were always the best players on the Athy team. Were they your family or cousins?
A lot of them, as a Luckman
or Lukeman?
Well, it's Lukeman where I come from.
Right.
But if you go up the road, it's, you know, Carlow, it's Lokman. And then if you go to Dublin, it's Lockman. So I changed it to the spelling that I was used to hearing, because when I would play rugby or something and they would put my name in the papers, I would say my name is Lukeman and they would write L-U-K-E-M. So I just changed the spelling to the way I'm used to hearing it, whereas it's originally spelled L-O-U-G-H-M-A and Lockman.
What position did you play when you were playing rugby?
I played from the age of 8 to 18. So I played like all the forward positions, but as I got older, I was pretty fast. So, you know, I played for, I worked my way up from the forwards right out to the wing. I played for the first for a tie on the wing, and that's where I ended my career. I was getting too well known at that stage, and I was a marked man.
All right, go on. So you were singing, were you?
I remember you used to play actually playing Kildare, and I remember when you kind of began, you were a marked man. I remember that fella was on, that fell off. Joe Maxey is on the team.
I remember this is the day I decided it was probably time to hang up my rugby boots, because I was at the bottom of a ruck, right? And I got these studs on my hand.
Yeah, all right.
And your man says, tell Dustin about that. So I said, maybe I shouldn't be playing rugby anymore. So you got a bit of that as well.
Well, you be an X on your back, don't you?
Yeah, you do, yeah. So I suppose when we talk to people in this, there's a lot of firsts, you know. Can you remember your first girlfriend, for example?
Oh, good Lord.
Where was the disco in Athy?
Well, we would have had school discos, you know, and the rugby club discos. They would have been a thing. But going to the pictures, that was
what was the name of the cinema?
The Grove in Athy.
Right.
Was.
That's on the way in there.
It's gone now.
Oh, is it gone?
They,
right.
They knocked it down and stuck a little up on top of it, which was a beautiful old Art Deco building. So I didn't think that was a.
But that's happened all over the country.
Yeah, I don't know. You go to Europe and you see the way they maintain all these old buildings, and over time they become really important. So, but anyway, that's progress. Yeah.
So the Grove, kissing in the back row, movies on a Saturday night.
Yeah. Serena Brennan, I think, was the name of the. She was an American girl who somehow lived in Athy. So that was probably no. We didn't actually. I remember we just held hands.
Right. And what did you go to see? What
I think it was the original Footloose. I'm really creaking here. You can hear my brain creaking trying to remember these things.
That's good. But you were introduced to Star Wars in the Grove as well.
Yes. I was lucky enough to be, you know, just where the age I was, I missed Star Wars. But by the time The Emperor Strikes Back came out, they did a double bill of Star Wars and then The Emperor Strikes Back. So I saw the two of them together, which for any Star Wars fan is very memorable, you know.
And you hooked then?
Ah, yeah, all the figures and all that kind of stuff, and still, you know.
You don't still have figures, do you?
No. I have no idea where they are, actually. I was looking for them recently for my nephew, but I can't find them. I don't know where they are. They're lost somewhere. But yeah, no, it's fun. And it's fun even following Star Wars still in that way, you know. Yeah. Just that it's an old memory.
I'm going to play this, and because this has happened before you were born, so you'll have to explain to me how it's important to you.
It's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind. Oh, that looks beautiful from here. It has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States. It's different, but it's very pretty out here.
Neil Armstrong, 1969, Apollo 11. You weren't even born.
No, I wasn't, but I had an obsession with you know, the moon landing and space in general. It was the wonders of space and all that. So, yeah, I remember having a scrapbook and...
Can you remember where it came from, though?
The scrapbook?
No, the interest, the obsession.
Just, you know, just, I don't know, just as a kid, I suppose, trying to escape a small town and space was such an intriguing thing. And then stuff like Star Wars and all that kind of stuff would have... I know, I was always into science fiction and all that. And... So, yeah, I remember I had a scrapbook and I had lots of anything I could find about space or the moon landing and all that stuff in it. I remember my sister used to have Look In magazine, I think it was called, and I used to cut bits out of that. You know, you kind of, you worked off whatever your brothers and sisters had, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, media-wise, you were just getting sporadic bits and pieces. You know, anything that came from America was amazing and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, so I wrote a song on my new album called The Sunset Is Blue on Mars, which... It is. It's the thinner atmosphere, and it's another one of those amazing, interesting things. But and I was asked to, you know, it's just funny how full circle things. I was asked to go down and sing it for a bunch of NASA astronauts and Buzz Aldrin down in Cork last year.
Right.
He didn't make it in the end. His son came, but just to be, it was
in
just
the
nice
company,
to be somewhere.
Have you spoken to an astronaut ever?
Well, I spoke to some of the guys down there. They're all trainee astronauts.
Yes, but no, have you spoken to anybody who's been in space?
No, haven't, no.
There's something about them. I've spoken to two
Well, it's the perspective thing. You go to space and you look back and you realise what a little speck it is. And then, you know, I'm big into astronomy and the stars and all that. And it's. I mean, years ago, that was our TV when we didn't have TV and all that. All they would have to do was look at the stars. So henceforth, you have all the old Greek myths and all that. But it's people need to look up more. And
can you remember looking up at the moon and thinking there was a man on that there?
Moment? Yeah, well that was the thing, I suppose, that fascinated me most, that that they had managed to do that.
What did you want to be then when you were?
Well, I wanted to be an astronaut, but you know, growing up I was and with the old Catholicism, they had me deeply into that. So I was either going to be a priest or an astronaut, right. But I became a musician, which is somewhere in between.
I don't see that myself. What did I see?
You're traveling around a place preaching to people.
Oh, right. Okay.
And, you know, when you write songs, you go into outer space to try and find stuff, basically. You know?
It works for you.
Anyway.
And that flirtation with becoming a priest, was that after this?
So he descends, the wine from the royal pope, the red robes of the cardinal, for his first step on Irish ground. He kneels, as he's done in other countries, to kiss the ground, as though to say, he too is a man, he too lives on earth, he's a spiritual leader, he brings all of that, but he understands how close people have to be to the land they live in. The president greets him.
There you go, the Pope John Paul being greeted by President Hillary at Dublin Airport.
Yeah, it was...
1979. What age were you? You were...
Well, I was six.
Six.
But it was the first time I was ever on a train, and the first time I was ever in Dublin was when the Pope came. And it was the first time I ever got up that early. To get the train to get to Dublin. And I just, you know, I just remember how packed the train was and how crazy the whole thing was. There was, you know, very masses of people. Was there a million people or something?
Yes, that's what they say.
I remember afterwards, even back in Euston Station, how crowded it was. It was like, you know, Armageddon. It was everybody was trying to get out of town. But yeah, that was one.
So what time were you up at?
News events that I remember. God, we must have been around six probably or something like that. I remember it was dark, so that was mad. And then just being on a train and
Houston, you would have been.
We went to Houston. I remember everybody walked from Houston out to Phoenix Park.
Yeah.
So like...
it's not a long walk now.
It's not a long walk.
But if you're six.
But nowadays you would get the taxi or whatever goes out there. But yeah, so that was my first, you know, big media kind of memory, I suppose.
And you can remember, have you got an image of seeing the Pope?
No, I don't. I remember he went by on the...
Pope-mobile.
Yeah, he went by in the Pope-mobile and people were standing on deck chairs and falling through them and all that kind of stuff to try and see him. But no, I don't remember much. I remember my dad actually sang in the choir, did a massive choir. He sang in the choir too. in the Phoenix Park. But no, I just have the memory of going to it and all that, but I don't remember it. We were so far back.
Yeah.
And they didn't have screens or anything back then, so you had to use your imagination.
Right, and you were six. So unless somebody put you up on... You weren't up on your dad's... He was in the choir.
He was in the choir, yeah.
Unless somebody put them up on your put you up on their shoulders.
Mm.
And was it after that then that you said, I want to be a priest?
Well, I can't say I ever really wanted to be a priest now. It was just, you know, when they get you heavy into it in around the communion stage. So
I think a lot of men have... I know you're a bit younger than me, but like I did flirt with the thought of being a priest.
I loved it was science fiction to me, the spiritual thing in the Bible and all the mad stories and all that, you know, that was always fascinating.
There was job security as well, you were guaranteed a house.
I wasn't thinking that far ahead. But I loved all the stories and Samson and all those things, like the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. So music then, when did you start performing in front of people?
Well, those sessions, I was saying, the few sessions we always had in our house.
And what was your party piece?
Well, I used to sing, lots of stuff, whatever. Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, that was one that I used to do. Minnie the Moocher, I used to love the Blues Brothers. So I learned, you know, you'd learn all the songs off videos. You know, when video came out, you were able to...
Right, I'll play a bit, you join in.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine, in the pale sunshine, our hearts entwine. Why, she carved her name and I carved mine. Oh, June, like the mountains, I'm blue like the pine.
Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy.
Was that where it came from?
Way out west, yeah. Well, that's... I remember back in, you know, in the 80s when there was still a lot of black and white shows on RTE, and you know, you had the Laurel and Hardy and the Three Stooges, Charlie Chaplin, Mr. Moto, all those things used to be on. I remember seeing this, and it was, and I remember we also had the song sang by somebody else on one of those Top of the Pops records. You remember those ones?
I do.
Saucy covers on them and all that. They were from the 70s more so, but you know, that particular.
And did you ever do Lee Marvin?
Yeah, I actually do Wandering Star.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do it in my own show every now and then. I segue into it at particular times. Yeah.
How low can you go?
Really low. Lower than this, baby. If I wasn't on radio.
He wasn't a good singer, was he, Lee Marvin?
No, but it's a fascinating vocal when you listen to it, because he's practically talking, but he somehow managed to squeeze a melody into one. It's all done in one note, but somehow it's an amazing vocal, I think. And that too fascinated me as a kid. You know, you're kind of drawn when you hear certain things that amaze you. And Lee Marvin...
I think I have it on 7-inch single. If I find it, you can have it.
Yeah, it's from Paint Your Wagon, and Clint Eastwood sang I Talk to the Trees.
Did he? On the other side, probably.
That was one of the songs from the musical, which is always hilarious.
Yeah. So you were doing it from an early age, and that was for family and friends.
Mm.
So when did you start actually getting out there in front of people you didn't know and singing?
Well, myself and my friends had, various little... We used to get together and just jam and play songs. And it was when I really knew that I could began to survive as a musician was when I abandoned my mechanic career and went working around Europe, you know, working in factories, and went to Holland to work in tulip bulb factories and all that kind of stuff. And then began to busk. And was making more money busking.
So, and you never bussed in Ireland?
No, but I came back and I started busking in Ireland. I mean, I was 18 then. I'd played with my friends, we played in pubs and things like that. And little things here and there. But when I went busking, that was kind of, you know, it's... People always ask you, you know, what for advice as regards playing music. And it is that leap between having a real job and then actually, you know, making a living being a musician, giving up the stability and being able to go and actually survive as a musician. So,
and what were the folks saying around that time? What were the folks saying to you?
I suppose they didn't want me to abandon my... I was 3 years into a 4-year apprenticeship, but I think we all knew that I wasn't destined for the mechanics world. So
right.
I think we, and you know, they were very supportive when I said, I'm going to be a musician. They were always, you know, very helpful and very supportive.
I'm trying to get, because I should have done this, but I'm trying to get one of your songs here, Georgie Boy. There you go, which is like, it's an amazing vocal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I always listen back to vocals and want to do them again, because even then I was probably 23 or 24, maybe. Maybe a little older, 25. And your voice develops, you know. If you listen to Sinatra in his 40s, that's when he was singing it. That's when he had that depth, that, you know, a lived life. And I think you get better as you go along. And if I do say so myself, I'm singing.
So listening back to yourself, say, with Georgie Boy, what do you hear?
It's like my voice hasn't broke.
Right.
Yeah. So I broke my voice since. Singing too much. I don't know. It's just the musician thing. You always wanna go back and redo things.
Years old. I know that version isn't 20 years old, but
no. Well, that's a different. That's not the album version from Metropolis Blue, which was 1999. Yeah,
yeah. Just 20 years next year.
Next year,
you'll have to do the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, well, I mean, it only happens the once,
it does,
you know, or the twice.
Georgie Boy on Metropolis Blue album. Excellent, says Clarence Soares. And I was a year or two older than Jack L in school. I remember him having the lead role in, I think, Fiddler on the Roof.
I think it was Offstage Course in Fiddler on the Roof, but I had the lead role in The Sound of Music.
Did you?
Captain Von Trapp.
Aha.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss. Great song. Love it.
So many good songs in that.
Oh, I mean, the Sound of Music is like, you know, they call it the golden circle in architecture where something is just perfect. And it just, the songs and everything in it is just an amazing.
I saw it in the Borgosh Energy Theatre recently.
Yeah.
With my daughter. She loved it.
It's evergreen.
I remember, and there is a song called Evergreen in it, isn't there?
Is there?
I think there is. I remember to this day the strength and power of his voice at the audition. He was about 14 or 15. Everyone stopped. This wonderful voice that hit the back wall of the hall. No microphone, no music, just wow. I wish him continued success. No, and I've recently been re-listening to Jack L's album Metropolis Blue recently. Fantastic. Really cool voice. And a little known fact about Jack L, he was a good Gaelic footballer.
Yeah, played for a thigh full forward, was pretty good at scoring goals. Played rugby too. Played rugby, a lot of rugby too for a thigh.
You mentioned things going full circle. I used to play the Jack L with Jack L and the Black Romantics on my car CD player. My two little girls became great fans. Now 23 and 21. We saw you in Whelan's together. Love your new album, Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole and The Sunset's Blue on Mars. Keep rocking. You're fabs.
Thanks,
Paula,
much.
Lydia and Gillian.
Brilliant.
Jack is a real singer, top class, Anthony. And on The Hulk died in the end. when he fell out of a plane. Poor crater, says Mike.
That's right. It was I think it was Bill Bixby's last movie too. He died of cancer after.
Right.
Yeah. He wrote that one, I think.
What is it about 1970s TV intros? Amazing. The Hulk, $6 million man, fantastic. Never been top, says Dan. There was one guy who was responsible for a lot of them. Can't remember his name. I remember Jack singing in the school musicals and thought great voice. And I love when Jack sings Summer Wind, says Paddy in County Galway. I saw Jack recently in Longford and he was brilliant as usual. Can you ask him why he doesn't do a meet and greet in Ireland like he did at the Birmingham gig last year?
Well, I do them all over the place.
Yeah, right.
So it depends what you've got on the next day, if you have to get somewhere to be early the next morning or that, because it can go on a couple of hours, you know.
Yeah.
So mostly I do. It's kind of a random kind of thing that happens.
Right. I heard Jack L singing in the church one Christmas in the Thai after Mass. He was great, says Danny. An extraordinary voice. Phil St. Flannan's Cathedral in Killaloe with his huge voice and mesmerising charisma. Had us in the palm of his hands. Stellar act. Brought us to another stratosphere. There, you'd like
Thank
that
you
scene
much.
As you're obsessed with. Glad he didn't become an astronaut, that person. And my husband used to sing our baby daughter to sleep every night with Rooftop Lullaby. She'll turn 18 this summer and the song holds a very special place in our hearts.
Yeah, that's it. It's a very popular one. It's one of those songs that kind of lives on late night radio. You know, it always pops up here and there, Rooftop.
No, maybe Evergreen isn't. Evergreen's the theme song from 1966 film A Star Is Born. So
that's it.
Like Evergreen in a sound, The Sound of Music. Anyway, so you were Captain Van Trapp.
Yeah, Edelweiss is a flower.
That's
maybe where you're getting the Evergreen thing. Maybe.
Maybe. Well, listen. Thanks so much for guiding us through the soundtrack of your life. Are there gigs coming up that you want to?
Yeah, I'm doing. The big ones are Vicar Street on the 27th and 28th of April. And I'm recording a live album, so I want all the best audience to come to that one. Who can, you know, all
the people
who can sing in tune or mime well.
Imagine you stop them at the door. Sorry,
auditions to get into the gig. Yeah, that's the main one I'm plugging. So that'll be fun. You know, I've done various live things, but with the new album. You know, you record an album and then you go and play it live and it takes on a new life. So I've got lots of great new songs like Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole, The Sunset Blue on Mars, Sky News Blues, King of Soho. They're great live songs, you know. They're good old knees up kind of vibe.
Right.
So looking forward to getting them.
And when the album's ready, you might come back in and we'll give it a
shot. Absolutely, yeah. Maybe I'll play some
Jack,
tunes.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a million. Thank you.
Say hello to Ty for us.
I will, of course.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or Ray at RTE.ie, and we have Joe Frost, who's the original super nanny, coming into us after 4 o'clock. So if you have any questions for her about the bold child in your life or whatever, it's Ray at RTE.ie or 51551. Now, you know where the media partner, the radio partner of Operation Transformation, and we've been talking to all the leaders since they started. And tomorrow is a big day because in the Phoenix Park at around 10 o'clock, 5,000, I think it's 5,000 people, will do 5K. And in that 5,000 people are the five leaders. And we thought it'd be great just to catch up with them the day before to see how they're getting on and if they're nervous or not. So Sarah O'Callaghan, how are you doing, Sarah?
Hey, Ray, how's it going?
Not too bad. Is tomorrow a big day?
Tomorrow's a huge day. Yeah, I'm so excited. It's a big milestone for me because it will mark 2 years ago that I finished my chemotherapy. So.
Ah, brilliant.
Yeah, so I'll be running 5K instead of sitting in a hospital getting chemo.
Well, that makes it extra special, doesn't it? So it's not about just you run the distance, it's about marking an anniversary.
Without a doubt, and it's my birthday then on Sunday as well. So.
What a weekend, what a weekend.
Lots of celebration to be done, yeah?
Yeah, we had Donal O'Shea in on Monday and he was saying you're the best group of leaders that he's seen. So well done on that. And he's been there right since the start of Operation Transformation. So he's entitled to have an opinion. Have you any fears or worries about tomorrow?
No, I've no fears or worries. There's no doubt I'll finish it. and what time, I don't know. But it's very exciting, you know, to do with the other four leaders and have my family and my husband there. I just can't wait. Yeah. So excited.
Great. Felicity is on the line as well. How are you doing, Felicity?
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. You sound bright and breezy there. You, on your own admission, when we first met you, said that you didn't do a lot of exercise.
No, Ray. And I swear, before this show, I couldn't even run 5 feet. So tomorrow is quite daunting.
Yes. Would you say of the five, you will the one who will be most daunted by it, if that's the way of saying it? Yes. Yeah.
Definitely. The others were big into their fitness before this. Now, Mary wasn't. So Mary might be nervous like I am. So I'd say myself and Mary are probably the most nervous because we would have been the ones who probably did the least exercise before this.
Yeah. So what do you think might go wrong or could go wrong, or what are your worries?
Well, I've never ran 5K without stopping.
Never.
You know what I mean? We've been, right. Never. And we've all been training for the last six weeks. And we've never ran 5K without stopping. You know what I mean? Our training has, like, as Carl says, we will have never ran the 5K before we do the 5K.
Yes.
So it's not like we've been practicing for weeks at home. You know, we haven't. So it'll be, tomorrow will be the first time any of us have ever done it. So I just hope I'll be able to do it without stopping, really.
Where's the pressure coming from? Yourself?
Myself.
Or Des? Or Carl? Or who?
Myself. I'm probably too hard on myself. I'm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't like to not do it. You know what I mean? So I'm dreading it. Well, I'm not dreading it. I'm just really nervous that I'm not going to be able to do it and let myself down, do you know?
Well, I haven't been there in previous years. There is a very special atmosphere around the Operation Transformation 5K, and you will get carried away in a good way. You know, if you're feeling a little bit weak halfway around, the crowd will carry on, I'd say.
The crowd will carry me on.
not literally.
Oh, the gas. Are you going to be there yourself?
I am. I will. Yeah, I'll be there.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, I'll be running around. I'll say hello to you. Mary Diamond, how are you doing, Mary? Felicity was saying that you weren't a big exerciser before Operation Transformation either. So how are you feeling about tomorrow?
Hi, Ray. I'm actually really excited about tomorrow. Do you know why? It's because I've heard so much about it and how everyone speaks so highly of it that I'm so excited about going to it. And there's so much support from home and from all over the country that have said they're going to be there.
Yeah.
I'm delighted.
Yeah. And are you just, what's the deal now? Have you been told you all have to run together, or are you allowed to bring people to run with you, or what's the deal?
Well, we'll have people to run with us, but I think everyone goes at their own pace and what they're able to do, and that's what makes it enjoyable. No more than 50 now, I'd be there with this.
Okay.
I'd be able to run that whole lot.
Yes.
But I'm really, you know, whatever frame of mind I'm in, I'm out to enjoy it tomorrow.
Great.
Whatever way.
Great.
Yeah.
Wayne O'Donnell, how are you doing, Wayne?
Good, Ray. Good. How are you?
Good. You would have been a footballer and all that. So you have you ever run 5K before?
I would have run 5K, I suppose, before, pre-accident, and back when I was in my late teens, but I haven't done it now in a quite a while. So really excited, looking forward to getting going.
Yeah. What have you been given a uniform for tomorrow, or what's the story?
No, not yet. We're just going to wear whatever, unless they want to sponsor us with some lovely outfits. We'll take them, I'm sure.
I think they usually present you with Operation Transformation t-shirts on the day. I think that's part of the deal.
Yeah, I think they're probably keeping them in a safe cabinet now, ready for us tomorrow.
Right. And is there any competitiveness between the 5E?
There's a small bit of competitiveness between myself and Dave sneaking in there.
Is there?
Right, sure. A bit of banter going back and forth.
How are you, David?
How are you, Ray? How are you getting on?
Right, okay. So go on, let us in, fill us in then. What you're saying, you're going to beat Wayne, and Wayne says he's going to beat you.
No, I'm only an old fella, Ray. I'm sure Wayne's a young fella.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Remind us what age you are, David.
I'm nearly 39. I'm 38.
Wayne, what age are you?
I'm 29, Ray, but there's a good story. You know, Niall Moyna actually described Dave as an elite athlete last week.
Did he?
So if I beat Dave, I'll be after beating an elite athlete.
Right.
And if I lose him, I'll just be losing to elite athletes. So I can't lose, really, can I?
Sarah, are you still there? No, Sarah's gone. Yeah, Felicity, you're still there. Who do you think will win between the two of them, Felicity?
Oh, geez, now. I couldn't say. It's like asking which one of your children are the same.
Right, okay. Well, listen, I'll see you tomorrow morning. It's 10 o'clock in Phoenix Park. If you're around, you can come and cheer people on. It's sold out, so you can't run it. And as I say, it's a very special event, and particularly special for our 5 leaders. So thanks very much to Sarah, to Felicity, to Mary, to Wayne, to David. I'll see you in the morning, and good luck. See you. Bye.
Take care, Ray.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Very excited today because we're joined in the studio now by parenting advice expert, best-selling author, children's advocate and family coach, Joe Frost. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Joe, people know you as Super Nanny, but you moved on from that.
I was on the Super Nanny show, that's right. People know me as the Super Nanny, correct.
Can I ask you just before we get into people's problems? What was the fascination? Because I think I was watching Super Nanny, you on Super Nanny, and I didn't even have children at the time.
I know.
Did you find that a lot?
So many.
Yeah.
I know so many. Couples would come up to me and say, we're watching it because one day we will have children. Right. It's this archive of parental wisdom and information. And on the other side as well, for those that don't have children, it's a fascination, isn't it, behind doors? You know, looking at how somebody lives and certainly how we portray that perhaps everything's perfect on the outside. And we all have our own issues, you know. But it's certainly was the beginning for me of having this wonderful opportunity to give, 30 years now
30
of
years?
My
is
expertise to families around years? The world. I know.
I'm going to talk to you more about it tomorrow night on the telly because
yes.
Today you're here to answer our listeners' questions. So I won't waste any of their time because this is their time. Okay, this is their time.
Yes.
So we get straight to it. My 2-year-old sleeps in our bed. Baby number 2 is on the way now and I need to change this bad habit. She has a bedroom and a bed, so I'm hoping it will not be too difficult, but I don't know how to start.
Yes. Well, you've started by acknowledging it needs to be done. It is a bad habit, so we want to create good sleeping habits. I would start off with a consistent bedtime routine. Consistent meaning you have to do it Monday, right the way through to Sunday, and all again the next week. That's most important because that leads us to success. Certainly, if we start off with a bedtime routine that can establish a good old bath or a wash down, you know, creating ambience in the rooms to create a slumber environment and then go through to something more quieter and calming like books, reading and then bedtime. And what's most important at this age, though, is certainly that your child during the day is showing no signs of sleep separation. We want to make sure during the day that the child's not very clingy. Otherwise, that will make them more clingy during the evening as well. So we can get our child more socialised and more confident in not having to cling on us all the time during the day. It will certainly help when we're sleep training them of an evening. Okay, so bath, book and bed. It's
routine,
really
routine, ritual,
routine,
ritual.
Routine, rituals.
And you said, you mentioned a really important word there, creating an ambience. Ambience. So does that mean bringing the light level down?
It does. The lights down, the blinds down, turning off all those distractions. We know what social media does, the phone pinging all the time. We need
for yourself presence. As well as a parent.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so important. But being present. Children need us at that moment before they need to feel safe to slumber. They need us to be present. And wholly there with them, you know, so that we can really make them feel secure.
Okay, good luck with that, because that's a big move. Dear Joe, my 1.5-year-old has very bad tantrums. If I remove a toy, etc., like he literally loses the head, how should I react correctly to him? 1.5.
Well, it's natural, you know, a child wants something at that age, at 18 months, and we just remove it. They're going to show emotionally displeasure for that. At that age, typically, we certainly distract. However, I think it's important to be the speaking clock. So why would you take the toy away? What is it that they've got? And can we incorporate, certainly within their daily routine, a transition of them moving on to different toys? So if it's due to maybe meal times or bath times and we have to stop playing, then we would narrate that verbally. We would say, we're going to put all the toys away now. And, you know, together you start putting the toys back in the box and they may show an apprehension and a kind of displeasure to want to do that. But we just have to recognise that that's what it is. They'll get over it. We'll shift them onto the next thing that they're doing in their daily routine. And sometimes we can overthink things, you know, and think that our children are going to, you know, absolutely have a meltdown and then hate us for it. But those temper tantrums do happen. And that's the time when we just ignore that particular temper tantrum because it's mock. They want what they want and they want it now. They're that age. And we move on. We move on to the next thing.
I want to ask you so many questions, but I'm cognizant of the fact that it's the list listeners' time today, and I can ask you the questions tomorrow.
Yes.
So we'll keep moving on. Okay, that's the one. This one. My 6-year-old grandson and his mum lives with us in the family home since his birth. Mum has issues and finds it hard to maintain rules. If I'm not there, anything goes as regards his behaviour. At this point, he can be difficult to manage and constantly nags despite my best efforts to keep him occupied within reason. We speak to our daughter and she will agree to a regime for him but won't adhere to it. Recently, he has been refusing to go to school in the morning. At first he was complaining of tummy ache, now he complains about the teacher. I'm worried about where we are going with his parenting. I'm happy at this point to take over his care without mum, but don't know if that would be the proper thing to do. Any advice from Joe?
The Sheila. Sandwich generation.
Go on. What's
you know,
that?
Well, it's the sandwich generation where you're, you know, you're raising, looking after your elderly parents, and at the same time you have a child yourself, or you're.
But Sheila doesn't know, sound too elderly, but yeah, but just three generations in the one
three
house.
Three generations
here, yes.
in one house, and that's really, really popular in Ireland. You know, in this case, God bless grandparents because they are just lifesavers in how instrumental they have become in the family household when it comes to. Being the grandparent, but the child carer as well. I would say to this grandmother, I wouldn't want her to enable, but to certainly be there to support and bring more confidence to her daughter with her own son. So it's going to be important to address why this young child doesn't want to go to school, the lies, the tummy aches, the apprehension of not wanting to go in, clearly shows me that there's an emotional situation that needs to be talked over with this little one. I certainly would want to have a conversation, a very serious one, where we can sort of intervene and create some kind of intervention of sitting down, mother and grandmother, and talking about her responsibilities as a mother and how we can support this mother to feel more confident. Right. Because what I'm seeing here is the grandmother wanting to take over everything. She's saying, well, I can look after my grandson, but that's not the object of wanting yes. to do so. It's more a case of how do we support.
And she's critical of her daughter's parenting skills.
Well, I think, you know, if very clearly, I don't know if it's critical. I think
no, she says, if I'm not there, anything goes as regards his behaviour.
Yeah, well, I think she's being real. I think yes. she's being realistic. You know, the reality is if the mother is not really pulling her weight and she's leaning on her own mother and grandma is doing everything, then she's enabling the situation and not really empowering her daughter to look after her own child.
So she needs to have a chat with her daughter.
Yeah, and say, look, here's as grandma and as co-carer sometimes, here are the things I'd like to do to support you, but where can we get you the help so that you can understand your own responsibilities?
Right, a big question, and it comes up in that, but inconsistencies, and I'm sure you've seen it over and over again between mother and father, inconsistencies. Yes. And how they parent. That must yes. be really confusing for a child.
Yes, it gives a complete mixed message because what's okay on a Monday is not okay on a Wednesday. And so I think it's really important that when you have a plan, you recognise the importance of why you're putting that plan in place and then following through to get the result. Otherwise, you set yourself up for failure.
But both people have to buy
right,
into the plan.
They have to be on board.
Yeah.
So that's why communication is so important when it comes to your own interpersonal relationships and parenting.
Have you ever had to call in social services in
yes.
your work?
Yes, yeah. It's tough. Yes, it's tough, but it's my duty to do so as a parental expert and being with families, yes.
And what I've spotted, because I watched loads of YouTube clips today, that you started off helping parents to parent, it was mainly about the children.
Yes.
But more and more you began to offer advice because it's obvious that the parents have a lot to answer for and that they're not, a lot of them are dysfunctional themselves. And that's the reason that the children are.
Well, they've not been taught certain life yes. skills themselves. They were raised perhaps maybe in different family environments. And some of those cases were abusive or dysfunctional. And might I just add, you know, that I'd like to get away from the social stigma of social services because they're there to help.
No,
to
provide, I know, but right? What I'm saying that you have witnessed some really
yes.
bad situations.
Yes.
So you knew that you couldn't cope, so you had to call in the...
Well, I knew that it needed certainly help that was beyond my expertise
yes.
that
yes.
could create the longevity of creating health and safety for a whole family. And you're very correct that, you know... when you've seen me do, for example, when you saw me do Super Nanny, I was helping families and then with their children. With Joe Frost Nanny on tour, I broke the fourth wall and showed the viewer the help that the adults were getting from uh-huh. me in order to then help their children and how that affected the whole family. So how we healed the whole family as a general. And that's really
because you're nearly a marriage counsellor in a lot of
in
cases.
In some cases,
aren't you?
Cases I certainly have helped the yeah. relationships. I do remember they're still happily married now, but I do remember many years ago, over 10 years ago, the Swanson family invited me to their home to help them with their children and served me divorce papers on the table. I said, here's where we're at. You're the last chance saloon. So if this doesn't work, then we've decided we're out.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah. And they're still happily married.
They are. And they send letters and it is wonderful.
The naughty step, because is that still the way to do it?
Do I use it? Yes.
Yes.
I use it if I have to.
Yeah.
But what I would say to any viewer, be mindful of your application of the naughty step. The naughty step will not make your children sit at the table and eat nicely. You know, the naughty step certainly is a technique to show consequences once a child has made a choice not to listen or to break the rule. But it doesn't teach a child how to put their shoes on. It doesn't teach a child how to sit at the table and to eat well and have manners and get down. And a lot of parents use the naughty step as a means to control the child and their behaviour. And objectively, we're not trying to control a child. We're trying to, in our best efforts, raise our children to have good manners, certainly to have good, strong values that we believe in. So to any parent using any form of consequence, whether that be the naughty step or a spot or a timeout bench, just be mindful of your application.
Okay. My three-year-old son, Joe, is very close to his cousin, who is almost 1 year older than him. His cousin is not a very nice child. I notice he bosses my son around, pushes him and hits him on occasion. My son is submissive and seems to idolise him, but I've been keeping them apart lately because I feel he is not good for my son's confidence and self-esteem. Is that a better way of approaching this issue without keeping them apart? Listener in Wicklow.
Not really. We tend to do that, don't we? We get so worried. You know, we get worried about what our family members might say, would it cause confrontation, would it cause an argument, and then there's this estrangement in the family and nobody wants to talk. But obviously, quite clearly, her son idolises his older cousin, and the older cousin, for whatever reason that is, but we do need to find out, is being rather unkind and mean. And so I think the best thing to do is to actually have a very graceful conversation that points out that this is happening. You know, sometimes parents are completely oblivious to what's going on.
Right.
And if we can just have 10 seconds of courage to sit down nicely with a cup of tea and just say, look, I love the boys, you know, playing, and I love coming around here, but it's actually a problem. You know, it's actually a problem right now, and I'm noticing it. What can we do? What can we do to change that so we can eliminate what's going on here? So
we can't discipline other people's children.
We shouldn't. You know, the idea is to, through parenting advice and wisdom and information, is to make parents more conscientious, so that they themselves are noticing when their children are misbehaving in other people's company, and that they step up themselves as parents to recognise that and to do the right thing.
Have you changed any of your attitudes over the years to what you do?
Have I changed?
You know, because I'm sure you've read over the year, you know, people who would question your methods or, you know, criticise it.
Yes.
Have you taken any of that on board, or do you still use the same approach that you did all those years ago?
No, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and, you know, you kind of have to have a thick skin to the people that don't like you and the people that do follow your work. But I walk with conviction, and, you know, what I do is from the heart, and it works, and it's worked for many, many years. And, you know, as long as those families are happy and what we're doing is in place for them, to serve them first, you know, then that's all that matters, really.
One more then. And this is probably one of the most common ones, sleep, isn't it? I have a three-year-old boy since January who is still waking every night four or five times and is drinking a full beaker of sugar-free juice each time he wakes. What should you do to cut this out and get him to sleep? Hazel wants to know. Three-year-old boy who's waking up four or five times.
It's become a habit. Whether it's waking up for food, whether it's waking up for a cuddle, whether it's waking up to kind of jump in that bed, go underneath the covers and have mummy and daddy as the human pacifier. It's creating the habit of getting up all the time. And the juice is making the child more thirsty. But the juice is also a bad habit, because the child's waking up now to drink more juice. And I might add on top of that, that if that juice is in a zippy cup where that child is still sucking, like the sucking reflex from a bottle, then that's what that person is using to cohere that child to go along and use those baby tactics now as a toddler to get off to sleep.
Okay, so they should be beyond that.
Totally. So again, you'd put the routine in place. You'd take away the water. They would have a they would have water an hour and a half before they go to bed. Certainly in the summer, we increase that a little bit because, you know, if we get some great weather here in Ireland, then we want to make sure our kids are hydrated, and certainly continue with those routines in place. So we've got good habits.
And there's going to be bumps along the way. Were you a fan of controlled crying?
Let's put the cap on that.
Right.
Controlled crying certainly was a Ferber technique that was to just let the baby cry and not go in at all. I use controlled time crying technique, the CTCT technique, my technique, where you put the child, kiss them goodnight, put them into the cot and you go out, you leave it for 2 minutes and then you go back into the child, shh, put your hand on their tummy, look at the bridge of their nose, you come back out, you double the time. So it's controlled and it's attached and you get the result that way.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to our chat tomorrow night on the telly. And I hope that our listeners got something from all of that. I'm sure they did. Joe Frost for the moment. Thank you very much.
You.
Thanks,
appreciate
Joe. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, Joe Frost is on the telly tomorrow night and some of the questions we didn't get to today I can put to her tomorrow. Also, we have Shane Lynch, who's fresh out of the Celebrity Big Brother house, and Andy Lee, who's just retired from professional boxing. We'll be talking to him. And Claudia Carroll, formerly of Fair City, and Isabel Mann, formerly from Glenroe, are joining us for a chat and also to do lip sync. So that's a full show tomorrow. Hermitage Green are back here. And just a reminder that they're in Whelan's, the bank holiday weekend in June, Thursday night, that's May 31st, and then on the, is that Friday night and then Saturday night, is it? Or Thursday and Friday, I think. Thursday, Friday. The Friday sold out and 31st, tickets still available. And then back home to Limerick, King John's Castle, June the 3rd, which is the Sunday night of the bank holiday. And they're going to sing us out today with a Bob Dylan song, Girl from North Country. And Barry's taking up vocals this time. When you're ready.
If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to the one who lives there. 'Cause she once was a true love of mine. If you go where the snowflakes fall, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see for me, she's a coat so warm, 'cause that's the way I remember her best. See for me that her hair hangs long, that it rolls and flows on down her breast. Please see for me that her hair hangs long, 'cause that's the way I remember her best. Darkness of my night, in the brightness of my day, thank you. you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to the one who lives there, 'cause she once was a true love of mine. That
was beautiful.
Thank you.
That was really beautiful. Hermitage Green, girl from North Country. Thanks very much to Dermot, Barry, Dan, Griff and Dara. Thanks very much, lads. Philip Boucher Hayes is on the way on Drive Time. We're on the telly tomorrow at 5 to 10, then back on the radio 3 o'clock on Monday. Enjoy your weekend, whatever you're doing, as your man says in the morning.